Hi, my name's Steve Usher, and welcome to the Experienced Designers Podcast. Hello, everybody, and a warm welcome to another episode of the Experienced Designers. So this is the last of my three-part series as we lead up to the Design Thinking Conference in Amsterdam. My final two guests are two brilliant women, Kalwant Bhopal and Dr. Poolang Makwalibi, both delivering powerful messages in their respective fields. So Kalwant is a British professor and diversity expert, having focused her research on racism and ethnic minorities in education and academia. And Poolang is one of 20 women globally selected to participate in the 2019 Women Leaders for the World programme and has been recognised as a global leader in the fields of creativity and innovation. So over to my guests and enjoy the show as always, and thank you ever so much for listening. So Poolang, welcome to the Experienced Designers.
Thank you, Steve. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you, and thank you for joining me today. And so look, just for the audience, for this very special edition of the podcast show, so just a quick introduction into yourself and your background.
Okay, so my name is Dr. Poolang Makwalibi from Africa. Born in Lesotho, but I live in South Africa for the last 14 years. Yeah. And my background is a software engineer. I used to be a software engineer for 7 years or so until I encountered work on design thinking and creativity. And that totally changed the trajectory of my life 12 years back. And now I am a design thinking and creativity and innovation facilitator and consultant.
Fantastic. Can I just ask, what was the epiphany? What was it about it that really transformed your direction?
The thought that as a software engineer, I applied my analytical thinking. My degree was in computer science and statistics, so all of my education sharpened my analytical skills. And coming to a place where I thought there's more that I could actually give to the world than just this part of me that has been influenced by my education. I could also give to the world my creativity, my passion, my story, my personality, my intuition, my imagination, myself, my love, my heart, my energy, and full presence. And I wanted to change my story to that of previously giving 10% of myself, which is just my analytical skills, to giving myself holistically to every minute of working. So I wanted to manifest, you know, my natural talents and what I was born to be every day in my work.
Fantastic. That's fantastic. And just in terms of, you know, outside of a general kind of introduction, is there something you could share with us that's perhaps some type that you don't normally share about yourself, or just something about yourself that you don't normally tell people?
Well, I'm the mother of two, 6 and 8 year old. My oldest is a boy. And because I learned about creativity and design thinking and this work before I had my kids, I was pretty much aware through my literature review of my PhD study that when you grow up, you lose your creativity. And so the first thousand days of your child, they're at their most creative. So I used my kids to unleash my creativity and understand creativity and be curious, engaging, be crazy and mad and forget about sense making, but just engage very differently to the world. Fantastic. So I believe after I gave and raised my two kids, I also kind of recovered some of my creativity because of their own natural born instinct of creativity, because of what I've observed in them and how I engaged with them.
Wow. So you took something from that as well. Amazing.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit, what have you been up to in 2019? What kind of adventures have you been on this year?
2019 has been one of the most fantastic years of my life. Firstly, I'm turning 40 in December, so it's my year of 40.
Yeah.
And I've had the most fabulous experiences. Firstly, lots of travel to different new countries and lots of engagement to different people, new initiatives, being more active within my startup spaces. Encountered, I think, more organizations and more industries this year than ever before when it comes to my design thinking facilitation. Mm. And it's been a really fantastic, very lots of work, lots of travel, but everything has been worth it. I feel like it's a year where I felt I lived my dream. I lived and manifested what I was naturally born with. So it's been great. And I was also, to put the cherry on top, was also chosen as 2019 Women Leaders of the World.
Wow.
So I got to travel to the Silicon Valley and meet other amazing women. And now I'm driving the Women Leaders of the World initiative in South Africa. And we're hosting it in 2020. So it's exciting.
Fantastic. Congratulations. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And how did that come about, just out of interest? What was,
The most amazing thing is it came from my delegate from 2016 in a design thinking program where I was coaching a group of delegates in a bank sitter program to come up with disruptive startups.
Yeah.
And I had to take them through my process to come up with these disruptive products. So two of the ladies came up with such a powerful startup that they registered it as a company, and it won lots of global awards, and they were selected as 2017 Women Leaders of the World. Mm-hmm. And they came back from Silicon Valley in 2017 and said, "We're going to nominate you to be on the next cohort of Women Leaders of the World," and they did. It was a rigorous process, lots of interviews and motivation and all of that, but I finally made it, which meant everything to me, because it was such an incredible opportunity, but it came from people that felt I deserved it and had made an impact in their lives. So that's what meant even more to me.
Fantastic. What an inspiration. Amazing. Amazing. So tell me about how did you come to hear about the Design Thinkers Conference? How did this come around?
Oh my God. My journey of creativity and design thinking is very fascinating, because some of the conferences I've been a part of for 10 years, I mostly found them either through the internet, or I was having lunch with someone and then they mentioned, and then I went back to the office and I Googled and researched and made calls. Mm. And this particular design thinking conference I got also online. So I saw people on LinkedIn saying, "Oh, there's going to be a design thinking conference." And I'm like, "What? I must contact." And the CEO of this design thinking conference, and I just one morning was bold enough to send him an email to say, "I love your conference. I've gone to your site. I love your vision. Can I be one of the actors?" And we had an hour-long conversation. What was fascinating was our journeys were kind of similar. Both went to a business school to learn about business and got an injection of design thinking.
Mm.
And we kind of took that back to our spaces and created initiatives around it, and Anne has done a stunning job with that.
Yes, fantastic.
Yeah.
Having kind of obviously seen the conference, is there anything kind of you're particularly excited about or really interested about for this year's conference? Well, actually next week.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I've always felt that empathy is really the most powerful part of the design thinking process.
Mm.
In that this ability to be able to seek to see the world from another person's perspective, to observe your misconceptions, your preconceived ideas, and throw them out the window, your own judgment, suspending it for a while and just immersing yourself, you know, in another person's journey in life.
Mm.
And, you know, being intentional about deferring your judgment. I've always found in the last 4 years where I've been doing design thinking work that this is one of the most powerful things.
Yes.
And it's something that when a person gets, it doesn't just transform their work experience, it transforms your life. It transforms your parenting. It transforms your marriage and your friendships, because you're constantly seeking to see the world from another person's perspective. Yes. And appreciating, you know, their experience and their journeys.
Yes.
So it basically makes you a more holistic person. It makes you a more holistic, more mindful individual. So it's quite life-changing and powerful. I give an example of a simple thing, like when my baby was 2 years old and he was coughing at night, and he had his own bedroom, and I didn't understand why he coughs at night, why he gets cold when he has the same duvet that we have and the same room, nice sizable room, and it wasn't cold. And one night I decided I'm going to sleep in my baby's small bed and feel how he feels at night and understand. And I was cold. I was freezing. And I got to understand. I said, there are no facts or data that can prove to me that this room is colder than all the other rooms, but I have felt it.
Yes.
I've slept in there and I felt cold. Therefore, the child needs the oil heater on the whole night.
Yeah.
And I have solved the problem. And that's how I eradicated this cough from my son. Me moving away from my king size bed into a tiny little bed and feeling what he's feeling at night.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so what do you have in store for us at the conference, without obviously giving anything away, but any sneak previews or any areas you can share?
Okay. So I think that part of the highlight is going to be the first 10 to 15 minutes where we explore what empathy is not.
Mm-hmm.
So I have designed a whole experience around what empathy is not.
Mm.
Our misconceptions about empathy. Mm. So a lot of us think we understand it and we know it, and we'll get to immerse ourselves with different experiences and then really challenge our preconceived ideas about what empathy really is. And then this is gonna develop curiosity for people to want to find out what is true empathy.
Yeah.
So I'll use different experiences to do this, and then we'll then delve into what could possibly be an experience of true empathy. Was that enough, or should I give more?
Perfect. Do not give any more away. Please don't. No. So no, that was wonderful. And
let me give you a simple example about, fake and true empathy. So I've lost both of my parents recently.
Yeah.
And before I lost my parents, I used to say, if a person lost their mom or dad, I would say, you know, I'm so sorry. You know, I feel your pain. And, you know, that was, you know, I'm so sorry. And, you know, I empathize. I have sympathy. You have sympathy, you know, that's all you can have if you have a nostalgic parent.
Mm.
But now that I have lost my parents, I understand when a person comes to work or I meet a person who says, I've recently lost a parent.
Mm.
I understand.
Yeah.
My reaction is completely different.
Yes.
From how it was. Yes. 9 years back before I lost my parents. It's very different, my approach, my conversation, how I look at them in the eyes and I hold them,
yeah,
I know. And yeah, it comes from a very deep place, because I can truly empathize with how it is to suddenly, without any illness, lose a parent.
Yes.
To get that call, you know?
Yes.
So these are some of the things that we take for granted on a day-to-day life. We say things and we respond to things without deeply thinking about the impact of our reaction to people's situations.
Yes.
So I'm much more mindful now, not just about death, but about everything.
Yes.
That, you know, what kind of conversations and what kind of questions you should ask in different situations. Yeah,
agree. I can relate to that. Okay, wonderful. Oh, look, Poulang, thank you so much for spending some time with me today.
I
really do appreciate it. And I'm
thank
really
you.
Looking forward to seeing you as an actor up on stage at the Design Thinking Conference next week, which is only next week.
Thank you. I'm excited and I look forward to it.
Yeah, and I really look forward to meeting you in person as well. I'll definitely come over and introduce myself certainly next week. So I look forward to that.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Enjoy the rest of your day. Take care.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now.
Carlin, hi. Welcome to the Experience Designer Show.
Hi, Steve. I'm very, very excited for the conference, and it's great to meet you.
Yeah, likewise. So just for the audience, a quick introduction into yourself and your background.
So basically, my name's Kalwant Bhopal. I'm a professorial research fellow and professor of education and social justice at the University of Birmingham in the UK. I'm also deputy director of the Centre for Research in Race and Education. So basically, I've spent all of my academic life, which is the last 25 years, researching issues of marginalisation and exclusion, particularly around race and racism, focusing on Black and minority ethnic communities and white marginalised groups such as gypsies and travellers. And I'm particularly interested in and have a passion for issues of social justice and equity.
Wow, fantastic. And where did this kind of passion come from during your kind of academic years or growing up and evolving?
That's a really interesting question, because I was asked this recently, actually, by one of my children, and I think that it came from when I was a child. My parents came to England in the 50s for a better life. And as I was growing up, I remember my father experiencing lots of overt racism. And I myself experienced racism as a child when I was 10 years old. I remember being spat in the face by two children and told that I was a smelly packy. And so I kind of have lived it, but also I feel as though I have a passion of speaking up for the marginalised and standing up for those who tend to be the underdogs. And in the past, I've done that. It has got me into trouble, but it's this notions of injustice that I find really upset me. And I feel as though as a society, we should all be doing more to stand up for those who are marginalised, because quite often they don't have a voice. And I think that we should all unite to ensure that everybody has the right to, for instance, education. So one of my mottos that I write about in my research is that education is a right. It's not a privilege. So everybody, regardless of their wealth, their socioeconomic status or their ethnicity, has a right to a quality education. And at the moment, certainly in the UK, that's not happening.
No. So tell me, what does your kind of world look like? Tell us a little bit about what you've been up to in 2019 and some of your focus areas. Be really interested to hear how this kind of mission and this passion, but kind of where, drumming it down to your day-to-day and what you do and your focus. What have you been doing this year?
So nearly 3 years ago, I got this job at Birmingham as a professorial research fellow, which was really a dream job. So it was 3 years of just focusing on research. So they basically gave me 3 years and they said, you can just go out there and you just focus on your research. So protected, 100% protected time. So what I've done during the last couple of years, so first of all, I published my book, White Privilege, which talks about whiteness and white identities and inequalities around race. And that has had a huge impact, actually. And I've been literally going around around the world talking about the book and also understanding how white privilege works. So that's been hugely impactful in terms of my personal life, in terms of where I've been and people that I've met. But I've also, I also use my research to make changes and have an impact on policy making. So, for instance, my research has been on race, has been used in higher education specifically to look at and the develop to look at how we can have changes around racism and how that can actually result in income in outcomes. Because at the moment, there's many organisations, not just higher education institutions, other organisations who say, yes, we really do value equality and diversity. We think it's really important. But what my research shows is that that's a tick box exercise and it's based on rhetoric. This isn't actually evidenced in outcomes or practice. So I think it's really important as an academic to do academic work and to have that theoretical and conceptual perspective. But I also think that being an academic, I always said that if I ever became a professor, I would not want to write research that just sat on the shelf. It has to make a difference to the communities that we serve. Otherwise, I don't think it's worth doing it.
No, amazing, amazing. And what do you see, and I'm sure we could go into a bit of a rabbit hole with this question, but I'd be really intrigued to kind of just to hear what your view on the future and the key developments in this topic and this area. What do you see kind of evolving over the next kind of year, 2 years? Where do you see these things developing?
Well, let me be an optimist first.
Sure. Yeah, we have to be. Let's start there. Definitely.
Yes. And say that I do hope we see significant changes in higher education, specifically around not just in who our professors are and who our senior leaders are, but also in terms of how we teach the curriculum, how we teach about history, imperialism and colonialism. So I do hope that in the next couple of years, we will see a change, because there is at the moment, there is an appetite for it here in the UK, where people are wanting to see change. And we've had significantly the change has come from students who've demanded through protests that they want to see changes in the curriculum, changes in the staff body. So optimistically, I'm hoping there is change, particularly in relation to the development of the Race Equality Charter Mark, which exists in universities. If that is tied to research funding, then universities may actually make some significant changes. But on the other hand, being a pessimist, I do feel certainly not just in the UK, we live in very troubled times, which are basically marred by insecurity and fragility and risk. You know, at least not, I don't want to turn the TV on today because I'm scared to find out what's happened in terms of who our Prime Minister is, what's happened in the House of Commons. So we are living in very insecure times. Okay. And we found that since Brexit, there has been an increase in reported racism. There is this notion now that people feel that they can speak the unspeakable, they can say the unsayable.
Yes.
So people feel that they can be overtly racist and get away with it because actually, as a result of Brexit. So I'm kind of hoping that, well, I'm not really answering your question, am I? Because I think that because we live in troubled times, it's very, very hard to tell how the political, economic and social climate will progress in the next couple of years. But
agree.
I do hope we see some significant changes.
Agree. And this is why I think maybe a more lengthier podcast, we could delve into that for sure, because it's hugely complex. And so, but no, I agree. I think there's two views we can take. And no, I think you articulated it well. So let's just flick to the Design Thinkers Conference. How did you come to hear about it? How did your paths connect and join?
Well, it was really interesting because I saw some notifications on Twitter and I had to look at them, and then Arne contacted me and sent me an email and said that we understand that you're doing this interesting work around whiteness and white privilege, and he invited me to come to the conference and present my work, which was really lovely. And we had some initial Skype meetings and conversations, and I did warn him that my work was about whiteness and white privilege, and he was very enthusiastic about that and said that this is something that he things would be great for the conference. So it really just all started from there. And then I did some research looking at some of the conferences that you've already had. And they're very different to the normal conference, the academic conferences that I go to. So I'm very, very excited actually to do something like this because I think it's going to enable me to look at things differently and present my work in a different way, which will be hugely exciting, I think, for me.
Absolutely. And it's not called, you know, through different eyes for any other reason apart from, you know, everybody can bring a different perspective, albeit if regardless of, you know, background or focus or career. And just, yeah, so I think you'll, I think also as a participant and as a speaker as well, I mean, obviously you'll be there for the 2 days, everybody takes something, and it's, that's what makes it, it's such a unique environment and, an atmosphere. It's a really interesting one. So I'm really looking forward to seeing you, very much looking forward to seeing you on stage and for you to share in your story and your journey. And so can I just ask any kind of sneak previews or insights? I mean, please don't give anything away, of course, but any sneak previews that you could share with us today?
Just to say that I hope I make you think and maybe feel a little bit uncomfortable.
Perfect. That's what we're there for. So no, but really look forward to seeing you up on stage. And again, thank you so much for your time this morning. Thanks ever so much.
Thank you. And I'm very, very excited to meet you in person in a number of weeks, I think now.
Yeah, it's not long, 4 or 5 weeks. It's not long. So I look forward to seeing you in Amsterdam.
Perfect. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Carol, and have a great day. Thank you.
And there you have it, another episode of the Experience Designers podcast. Thanks ever so much for listening. And of course, to my guests, Kalwant and Pulang. Looking forward to meeting you in person at the Design Thinking Conference later this week. So next up is Stefan Moritz and Raki Rajani from McKinsey Design as we delve into the future of robots and humans working together. So really looking forward to delving into this and seeing where this takes us. So thank you ever so much for listening. And until the next time, bye for now. Thank you.